Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 107. I'm your host, John Jordan, and joining me today is Don Norbury, who is head of studio at Neo, which is developing Shrapnel. How's it going, Don?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, John.
Good, good. It's a shame we're on streaming video and we can't be there in your office with your impressive collection of bottles behind us.
But you're welcome to stop by at any point.
Yeah, anytime, yeah. Cool. So, yes. So the first question we always kind of like to talk about is how people got into the space. We'll talk, I guess, a bit about Neo and how you guys, you know, you really experienced sort of a game dev team. So maybe talk a bit about that, what you've done in the game space. But it's always interesting to get that that situation where sort of the blockchain or crypto, sort of the light bulb went on in your head and the two things came together. So do you want to give us that in a nutshell?
Yeah, I'll reverse that and just tell the kind of the Neon story for a second, and then how we got into Shrapnel. Our core founding team all came out of HBO Interactive. We all worked at some point in Xbox as well. Basically, the entire team has spent 15 to 20 years each, sometimes plus, in AAA game dev. So that is the background that we all come from. We spun out of HBO a couple years ago, and kind of we knew when we were working together that there was like the highest caliber team that we'd ever worked with. We were kind of designed to be this research and development as well as publishing team at HBO for franchises like Westworld and Game of Thrones and stuff like that, as well as the like volumetric video and like ML stuff, and trying to find where the next tech lift is going to come from on the entertainment space. So we've been doing that for about 2 years. We founded Neon right before the pandemic hit. It was genius timing. and done a number of things, different production products, as well as did virtual production for Hollywood a little bit as well. And about a year ago, we started talking about founding our own internal studio and building an internal studio around an idea we'd had for a long time, which was a bunch of us are old enough to remember like the modding scenes in the 90s and early 2000s of, just sometimes harsh in communities, but often joyous communities of building stuff and sharing it with the world and seeing what people thought, and some of it stuck and some of it didn't. And we've seen kind of this evolution in more recent times of like the Minecraft generation and Roblox, kind of age into Roblox and then age into Fortnite, and maybe or PUBG if they're a little more like a little more adult or serious tone, and there wasn't really anything creative in that space. So we kind of had merged these ideas of wanting to cater to people in that age range and kind of a more adult curated experience, and also a game mode that we have been very interested in recently, which was extraction shooters. Everybody does the Battle Royale. Battle Royale has been very popular for a while now, and there's a lot of really good design principles for why that's the case. We've kind of strongly feel that extraction is going to be the next version of that, and had been tossing around this idea of extraction, and also just having this creator piece. So about a year ago, we had this idea been floating around. We kind of hit headlong into blockchain space, and I'm also the CTO at Neon, and for me, from a technical perspective, I was plenty aware of kind of blockchain technology, but not so much just because of everything I'd been doing at the time. I didn't have the time to dedicate to understanding the community more heavily, like what the principles were and how it was evolving rapidly over time. We kind of took a couple weeks, really took a couple, you can do this in startups where take a couple weeks, dedicate yourself to researching something and understanding it. So for me, that was writing baby's first Solidity contracts and understanding what I was getting into, and then really getting involved in the community. And it kind of clicked, like the head moment clicked of, this is perfect for this other idea that we've had. We should combine all of this. And that was the beginning conversation and research that was the inception of what is now the Shrapnel project.
So was that sort of coming together bit, when you talk about sort of communities, you know, obviously every sort of game has a community, so that's no different. In that degree, Strapnel's no different to any other game that, you know, you want to build a strong community around that. But obviously, you have this modification bit as well, which I imagine the community sort of, that's what it really plays into. So every blockchain game always goes on about how great its community is. Kind of fair enough. But can you unpick a little bit about the how you thought the blockchain bit really played into the sort of the mod bit and that part of the community?
Yeah, I mean, it's, there are the obvious parts, right, mm. which are the utility expressions and ownership. And so if you're going to make something and you're going to create something, like, what is the depth of your ownership and the control you have over that, that blockchain grants that in a way that no other, no other technology intrinsically does, right? People often talk, we're like, well, you could do that with this and this and this, and I'm like, yeah, but nobody's going to, right? Like, blockchain intrinsically is that at its core. I think the other side of that as well, when I talk about more of the community, is just, it's just this great, I'm gonna say, like, optimistic, a little Wild West, but mostly, like, very energetic, optimistic creator community that exists in the space anyway already. Just kind of, it's in that technophile stage. We're seeing the fundamental initial building blocks, but there's just so much potential that it's kind of like feels viral when you get into it. And for us, that's a perfect mix for, like, the style of creation and ownership, and bundling it with a, like, top tier creative product that people want to get into, right, and want to make their own pieces of. Even right now, like, in our Discord, we have pretty decent sized Discord community already, and the members of it just go nuts with even the collateral that we've released, like some of the concept art and some of the, like, pieces of equipment and stuff that we have that are in the game. Like, I'm shocked and in awe of some of the stuff that they've just done as almost like community and fan art already.
This is one of the, I think in blockchain, sort of games, we've gone through sort of various waves of just, the initial thing was just like, wow, you can make blockchain games, and sort of, I guess that's where Axie sort of came from, and some of the other stuff, and then we sort of have, this sort of situation over the last sort of year where we've had sort of people have actually made games before starting to make blockchain games, which is, I mean, obviously, kind of, that's the degree where you guys come from, as some other sort of teams a bit earlier than you in that.
Yeah.
But I've always been surprised. I mean, there are some real headline sort of grabbers, a bit like The Sandbox, which clearly does this. I mean, that's all it is, really. I mean, it's that much more that metaverse thing. But it's been sort of surprising to me that there hasn't been more of that, because if you're just sort of taking a existing game genre and put it on the blockchain, I mean, clearly there's an advantage in doing that, because if you're the first to get, like, say, a first person shooter, if you're the first to put kind of Counter-Strike on a blockchain, you're probably gonna do okay, but that's not really taking advantage of what you're saying, which is, the user generated content bit, however you are going to play that out, is really the strong glue of the blockchain, and the fact that you can, get a token for a headshot or something. I mean, it's sort of almost, it's almost like irrelevant, and you see quite a lot of that. And it's like, I won't mention names, but there's one game where you said, a dollar a kill or something. I can't remember exactly what in the play to earn thing. And you kind of think, maybe you can build a product on that, but it doesn't have the deep roots, which is sort of, it's interesting. That it still seems very few products. I mean, I guess it's more complex to build those sort of products, so that's why people aren't doing it, I suppose. I mean, I imagine you're spending as much time, probably more time, on your modding stuff than potentially the core game. Well, not the core game, but
I mean, there's a couple pieces to what you're talking about. Like, the first part being Sandbox as an example, and it is the most appropriately named product ever, right? There's a lot of these games that call themselves like the metaverse of the X and a metaverse of Y. Sandbox is is like the most appropriately named title ever, because most of those games that call themselves the metaverse of something are just a sandbox of that, right? We have one of our pillars, it's, we're not the metaverse, we're part of it. We see actually like blockchain and GameFi and the fundamental, effectively like the TCP/IP of the metaverse is blockchain. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about our product, it is like Shrapnel is the Shrapnel corner of the metaverse. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong eye towards what interop contracts are and like participating in that, that conversation with the rest of the development community and doing it like legitimately. What does that look like? But you know, we're not making a sandbox for everyone. We're making Shrapnel, and it's not just like the Counter-Strike. It's also there's a fiction and a world building to it. There's a universe that people want to be part of, and then they want to grow their part of it, right? They're in the same vein as the kind of fan and community art. They want to put their brand on it. They want to have people see, you know, what they've done that contributes to it. And we feel that those people should be rewarded, that they should be have incremental ownership over the thing that they are contributing to, and that should be commensurate to the value that they're actually providing. Like, you know, we see a success scenario with our creator tools. Like, the first tipping point will be when most of the content that people are engaging with is community content and not not stuff that's coming from Shrapnel and from Neon.
I mean, you guys have been been playing your cards pretty close to your chest. There's not an awful amount of information, not a lot of information out sort of publicly at the moment. I guess sort of one thing you have. Before we get into that, I mean, why again, in contrast to lots of other blockchain projects that immediately whack out a white paper and put a token live and NFT drops all over the place? You know, you've been going for a year now, and there's very little. So why are you taking this sort of very different approach to everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's wildly different. We will have a token and we will have a white paper very soon, in the coming weeks. We've been doing a lot of our homework, right? So we certainly are balancing kind of meticulous preparation with making sure the community is involved, because that's a huge part of what we're doing. I would say, in blockchain protocol world, because you're systematizing everything in immutable ways, you want to be very careful about specific things when we talk about, how the economies are structured. And that includes, like, a huge part of that economy structure is for creators creating things. How are they rewarded? How is content being promoted and discovered, right? Because you're going to end up with a ton of it, right? How do people decide what's awesome? And how do people get rewarded for creating awesome stuff and creating a positive feedback loop so that people are incentivized to keep creating more? So we have, I think, before we're getting to the point that's coming very close, we wanted to put a lot of thought and simulation and everything into that to make sure we were doing it responsibly. Also, just, in what we're doing, we have a very, it's not even really a long-term, like a medium to long-term goal of making Shrapnel a place where gamers who aren't necessarily crypto savvy come to play as well, right? To bringing, we always talk about the gamer bro, the crypto bro to the gamer bro crossfade. Like, we're very crypto bro right now. Or it's the crossover, like Venn overlap of the gamer and the crypto savvy. Our holy grail will be when normal gamers who haven't, I know about the Bitcoin or something, and that's about it, come to Shrapnel to play, and are there because, it's fun and exciting, and they like what they're getting into.
I mean, I think that interface is fairly fluid, but obviously for the last kind of, 6 months, only 3 months, we've had that's been quite a contested sort of place. And obviously you guys coming from, the sort of traditional game development sort of background, fairly hardcore, AAA sort of thing, and broadly, I would say that's been sort of like the heartland of the sort of pushback, into sort of blockchain. So, do you think that's just people haven't sort of gone through that experience yet, or do you think that's ever going to change, or that's going to be slightly like a self-identifying of hardcore gamers that you hate blockchain?
I will say. So GDC is this week, actually, and I'll be heading there tomorrow. We have a large portion of our teams there already. And DICE was recently, it wasn't that long ago, in Vegas, which is a little more of like a biz dev and leadership tier conference, but still kind of a gaming space, gaming centric space. I would say the scales are tipping. There is definitely a noisy response. There's some of it's has shreds of validity to it, because in this space, like in technophile space, there's not all just good actors. In every space, there's not just good actors, right? And it's far, far juicier to talk about those like negative actors. People don't love like clicking on things that are like super healthy and awesome. They love hearing the latest drama. So you know, that gets highlighted and exacerbated. I would say, based on, you know, talking with the people that I know in the industry, it's definitely turning towards far more curiosity and less just outright negativity. There's still a healthy dose of skepticism. I mean, we always do, you know, we always bring a healthy dose of skepticism in everything we do as well, right? So like, I can't blame people for that. I understand and empathize with that. And it's our responsibility to do awesome stuff that they can see as an example of like good actors in this space and quality projects in this space and like healthy communities in this space. So, you know, ultimately we like need more and more of that to bring those game devs more and more to the blockchain space. But if you look at, if you look at the sessions for GDC, it just as an example, I was going through them like last night or the night before, just like setting up my, my week. There are some time slots that have like five or six blockchain gaming sessions in one time slot. If you can't find a time slot that doesn't have blockchain gaming centric sessions. So like there are, there's certainly a lot of vocal opposition, but I think it's less than people might think just based on how noisy it is.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing is that the noisiness of the sort of reaction over the last few months has actually meant that some people who would have announced stuff haven't. So it's sort of, there's been, one side's been very loud and that's meant the other side has been very quiet. And at some point, all these games that are in development that maybe you I know some about, some of them you probably know more about than me. And suddenly, you know, those guys are not necessarily in a hurry to announce what they're doing. But at some point, for the rest of the year, it's just going to be like a procession of sort of blockchain, you know, fairly high profile, I think, blockchain games being announced. And it, I think, you know, well, I guess I hope, but I also sort of think that the sort of, the shilling against it will be sort of set in the context that a large proportion of the industry is at least looking at this as a interesting way to make a different sort of game, which is, I guess, you know, what the industry hopefully has done for the last 35 years.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think people are starting to see the inevitability of it in some form or another. There's not a big publisher on the planet that isn't doing something in the space. It's just, like you say, how visible it is. It's more a question of, like, who can do it first, and what's that inception within the public eye look like. Well, you know, we've seen certainly like Ubisoft Quartz as an example. You can see proof positive that at least in the next year or so, it's not going to be one of the big publishers that actually drops that in a successful way. It's likely going to have to be a little more, I won't say grassroots, but from studios like ours that have a fresh team, fresh eyes, don't have, you know, multiple decades of customer expectation and brand expectation tethered to it, so where we can actually build something from the ground up properly with it. Who knows where it goes from there, but I think that that will be how the snowball gets rolling down the hill.
Good. So one sort of data point you have announced sort of fairly recently is that you're going on the Avalanche blockchain, and without getting all sort of too techie about it, I mean, there's not been, I mean, Avalanche as a blockchain has sort of been picking up sort of momentum, I guess. You know, Solana had its sort of time in the sun, and now Avalanche seems to be having its time. And there's a few games being announced there. I think you were one of the first, certainly one of my high profile. So I think it is always, you know, interesting when it is a fairly new sort of tech with not many games on it. So can you talk us a little bit through that sort of decision-making process?
That was a long decision-making process, obviously, like a year long. And, you know, we've talked and evaluated with everyone that you can possibly imagine in this space, including probably tons that people don't even know exist, or very small corners of the blockchain space. So and that's, you know, layer ones as well as layer twos. The ultimately everybody's searching, at least in gaming space, for this kind of like combination, this intersection of nearly impossible things to achieve, right? You want strong GameFi, like DeFi capabilities, which means you want like good, you know, transportability. You want scalability.
Yep.
And that is, you know, controllable, like scopable and scalable within your own space. And you want at least some like level of intrinsic, I don't want to say barriers, but something to at a low level have like KYC, okay. AML, like policies around how transactions are being validated. So you want things to be able to be used everywhere. You want a measure of security and policy, you know, and you want to be able to not share block space effectively with people that, that could, you know, make your game tip over. You know, be the equivalent of like having Fortnite have a really heavy day and suddenly PUBG doesn't work, right? So like Avalanche, specifically Avalanche subnets, are the answer to that from a technical architecture perspective for us. They are relatively new, and you know, we work very closely with the Avalanche tech team in terms of exactly how the execution is going to progress. But it is, you know, it's the, what do they call it, the internet of layer ones or whatever, right? It's it's effectively like where we need to be in order to achieve all of those things. Every other solution we've looked at is heavy trade-offs, right? They all have heavy trade-offs. So this is the one where there's still always trade-offs, right? One of the trade-offs here is that it is relatively new. But we feel deeply that the fundamental architecture and approach is strong and supports kind of gaming, especially for like, we're willing to dive in at a deep technical level. We're not necessarily looking for a complete out of the box solution like a lot of these kind of partnerships are. So you know, we're willing to put a lot of that together and put in the effort, and with a kind of the long-term vision of delivering Shrapnel as a scalable game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's clear. If you, for teams who don't have the technical ability, then they're compromising from the get-go by going with a middleware that's basically going to sort of tell them what to do, which has always been the middleware sort of problem with middleware. It's certainly an early stage, isn't it? I mean, it's just
Put yourself in a box. As long as you're okay with that box, then it's great, right?
Yeah. And for some, I think for some products, that's absolutely fine. Particularly if people are sort of doing a a more experimental sort of smaller project that just to sort of get their feet wet, then that's probably a sensible way to do it. But obviously, you know, you guys are. Your competitive advantage is you can go super deep. So I'm probably going to embarrass myself horribly here, but so subnets, are they sort of like a your own sort of L2 that you can sort of run your own thing on, or is that horribly garbled?
Should
we just move on then? You've rolled your eyes there. I think I've embarrassed myself.
No. I mean, I would encourage people to look into it. Okay. Because Avalanche has its own consensus mechanism and is a DAG. Topology. So you're effectively seeding, like creating your own validator that allows you to define rules. You can actually even have custom EVM or a custom virtual machine for how you're going to run your subnet. Ultimately that's going to have an impact on interoperability. So there's a trade-off there. The capability is there. Whether we will use that, probably not, just because we want like one of the big draws, I guess I didn't mention is that Avalanche is EVM. When you talk about transportability, you're putting yourself in the most compatible space.
That sort of goes. I would say it goes without saying. I mean, that's my personal sort of view, but it seems to be there is this. I think you lose a lot if you aren't EVM compatible, which is not very clear that you necessarily what you gain. I mean, another sort of interesting thing is, and this is, even within projects, they're sort of always sort of try to balance this out. How much stuff do you actually put on chain?
We'll have a lot more detail on that in the future. I mean, that is a excellent question, right? For a game like Shrapnel, where it is a real-time shooter, extraction shooter, you're not doing your simulation on chain, right? Those are that, like, that poor simulation is being done on a dedicated server that's running at a very high frequency for physics simulations and collisions and doing client-side prediction and lag compensation and game rules resolution and all of that. So that is not something you put on chain, right? Yeah. How you resolve the session and the results of what people do and what people own, that's more the space that we're planning in.
Good. Now you're being very circumspect because your white paper is coming out in a few weeks time. So we'll let you be circumspect on that one. I guess just for the we haven't sort of mentioned it, but your PC game, at least in the initial stages. I mean, when you're talking about the sort of the crypto bro sort of and gamer bro and combine those together. Is that PC seems to, in the blockchain space, seems to be sort of having a resurgence. I guess partly because consoles, it's a bit too early for consoles. I guess we'll see blockchain games on consoles when Microsoft and Sony decide that's the case.
But, yeah, that's a human wall primarily. Yeah. That's a policy wall. And I worked at Xbox for 6 years, so I know exactly how that works internally.
It's just a slow moving process.
Yeah. Until it's not, and then it's a very fast moving process. But yeah, the... yes, we are PC centric from a client perspective. Mm. We have a number of tools that are web centric, so there'll be a whole ecosystem of things to do that don't require the Unreal client that we are distributing. Yeah. But the core gameplay exists in the UE5.
Mm. Because I guess, you know, we've seen with Axie Infinity, the vast majority of people have been playing, you know, I mean, obviously maybe a different sort of game, but been playing on APKs side-loaded. So given that blockchain is very global, or at least has a potential to be very global, is that just one of the compromises you have to make to make a sort of AAA high fidelity sort of game?
It's to be honest, it's a scoping thing. Hmm. It is a... this is a game development thing where at some point you have to sit down and decide what the priorities are and what you need to remove in order to mitigate risk and guarantee success. Going after we certainly have mobile on our roadmap.
Okay.
That's further out, right? One of our scoping exercises is we focus on PC first, make that the core experience. And then we start to do the mobile migration further down the line. But you can only pay attention to so many things at once.
I guess actually one of the sort of fascinating things in mobile over the last sort of few years has been like the rise of like a PUBG mobile or a Free Fire or something, which is, and obviously that's appealing to a different community, of a different geography, I suppose. But
yeah, I mean, most people don't realize PUBG on mobile was the highest revenue game, right? Like, period.
Yeah, and I played it when it came out on mobile, and I was just like, this is insane. Well, no one's going to play on this, and obviously, that's how much I know. So, I mean, coming back to that, I don't know if it's called the scale side of things. I don't know how much Avalanche helps with this, but clearly sort of dealing with wallets and onboarding, and you mentioned a bit of sort of KYC in the past, how are you thinking about that? And... does Avalanche help with any of that stuff and your ability to sort of control your subnet?
Yeah, Avalanche a bit. We have some other partners that we'll be talking about and announcing in white paper timeframe that actually help a lot more in that space. It is definitely, it is both something we consider highly important and wanting to have the widest addressability of gameplay audience as possible. Yeah. But it's also something we know we're not going to solve internally, and it's not like our core expertise. So finding those partnerships was very important to us. We always talk about people need to be able to get in and play, just period. Like you need to get in, play the game, shoot some people, extract some loot without having to worry about any of that and have it be that frictionless an experience. Further down the line, as you find that it is the thing that you enjoy, then that the more and more interaction that you want, there's going to be like policy boundaries, right, that get put in place, like regulatory boundaries that we have to we'll always adhere to, right? Or we part of wanting to have that wide audience is also doing our best to be responsible citizens. So it's finding that balance tricky. Finding the right partners important.
It does seem to be one of the I mean, many things in blockchain games have sort of got just sort of obviously got better, and there's been, you know, sort of consensus around sort of things to do. The sort of onboarding wallet thing, it seems to actually have made no progress at all. It's still basically you go with MetaMask or you come up with some other weird sort of, and there are obviously more systems around, but it's fundamentally doesn't really seem to have changed very much over sort of 4 or 5 years, which is sort of odd.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible. And when you look at the space in gaming, like you have to take a notion of what we're used to, which is creating accounts transparently in the background, like doing things custodially effectively, until somebody decides they want to be for realsy reals, right? And then you know, have that like additional friction if it's required. And like games, this is well-tread territory in the game development space of when you can actually do that. You know, the best examples of this are unified platforms, really, when you talk about something like on your iPhone, where all of your credentials are already there, right? Your ID is already there. Your payment methods are already there. All you got to do is like put your face in front of the camera and approve something. That's like the holy grail of just frictionless, seamlessly moving. But that requires a decade of platform itself development to even get people comfortable, let alone like that flow so that other apps could use it. That I would say is the holy grail. Even looking at like PC games, they don't have necessarily great experiences depending on which ecosystem you're in. Like if you're a Steam player and you go to the Epic, a game that's in the Epic store, you're gonna have to go through all the BS again, right? Or direct to consumer title, or good old games or whatever. Like those are all very disparate experiences that require LastPass or whatever you're going to use as an account management.
And I don't know how much you're probably not going to want to go into any specifics on this with the white paper coming out, but I do wonder, you know, as we've sort of been discussing, we haven't really discussed very much of the game. And typically a game developer would spend all the time talking about the game because that's what they're doing. But
yeah.
For you guys as a sort of team, how different has it been sort of working on Shrapnel and having to, we've not really gone into the economy, but, you know, that's something that, you know, people now have some experience of in the free-to-play space.
It's been 50% familiar and 50% a completely new experience, right? So when you talk about the creative elements, those are all super familiar zone for us. So when we are doing, when we were doing like design documents, world building exercises, like going through the narrative and the fiction and, how we end up where we end up and how we tell those stories and how we apply that from a transmedia perspective. And then how we go through and you like systematize each of those pieces so that we can iterate on them in an actual playable and yada, yada, like all those it's a game. And we know, at studios, and certainly during my time in global publishing, the game has to come first. It has to be fun, right? People like either they won't come to your space or they'll come to it for the wrong reasons, and you don't want them there anyway, unless it's a fun game. So that has always come first, and protecting that creative process and evolution has been a huge part of what we do. The 50% unfamiliar, that often, that's certainly like, what does it mean to have not just a utility token or like NFT ownership, but creation and incentivizing people to find things and create in responsible ways, and like so that it is a systematized feedback element that people want to get into. That is a completely unfamiliar territory for us that we spent a long time, and certainly like certain of us spent more time like dedicating ourselves to it so that the game creatives could do like, just, you could ignore all this, make fun game, right? And so what we did was kind of parallelize those things, and then we'd have points where we butted heads with each other and we would do that repeatedly. While we're doing like Monte Carlo simulations on economic principles, they're creating game systems that have whatever, like skill trees and crafting systems and yada yada, and we're like, okay, these things have to reconcile with each other somehow. And because normally in a game you would have a little bit of the economic side and a lot of bit of the other, and you kind of, because you have all the levers, you get to fix it in production, basically, or, you know, figure out how to tune it in production. You can't do that here, so there's way more rigor up front. And it's changed the design process a bit. And it was definitely frictional for a little while. But I think the result of what we came out with, design like almost always functions better with constraints. The blue sky is, you know, the blank canvas is the worst place to be. So when we started with the game and then we're able to take economic rigor to it and then come back, it got like better and better because we were able to put more and more boundaries on what people could and couldn't do.
Good. Well, we'll find out more in a few weeks' time when your white paper comes out. So look forward to that.
Yep.
If people want to know more, where should they direct their attention?
I mean, the best place that we'll always update is our website at trapnel.com. They'll always, like, any of the big updates you'll be able to find there. You'll also be able to get into our Discord. Shrapnel Discord's very, very lively. We do a lot of community interaction. And then you can find us on Twitter at PlayShrapnel.
Good. Lovely. Thank you very much for your time, Don.
Thank you. Appreciate having me.
Yeah, have a good GDC. Yes, I think it will be interesting to see how the pros and the cons of blockchain filter through the first one in 3 years that they've had in the flesh.
Yeah, in person.
Lots of fun there.
We'll see the type of energy and kind of the personalities who actually decide to show up to in person, right?
Absolutely.
It's like we're definitely that type of studio.
Okay, good. Have a great time, and thank you for listening and watching however you consume the podcast. Remember to subscribe. Every week we're talking to the people who are building out this incredibly interesting world of blockchain and gaming, and there's just an enormous amount of games in development at the moment, so plenty to talk about, and everyone's sort of coming up with their own view on things. It's a great time because there are no real templates, so everyone's building their own. So hope you enjoy the people we're talking to, and come back next time to find out what's going on at Blockchain Gaming World.